technology is the most powerful change in the world of education.
Everything changes.
Welcome to the Emerging Technologies in Education podcast, delivered to you by Clever Books Company. Dear listeners, thank you very much for joining Emerging Technologies in Education podcast series. Today, our guest is David. Hi, David. How are you?
I'm great, Daria. How are you this morning?
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you very much. So, as we are having David, and David is a knowledgeable guest, I would like to give him a word to introduce himself, where he's coming from, and what he's doing professionally.
Well, thank you, and really thank you for this opportunity to be on your program. We're very excited. My name is Dr. David Koffitz. I live outside of Charlotte, North Carolina in the United States. I was a public educator for about 18 years, starting in the classroom, teaching at the elementary level, and worked my way through several positions, including assistant principal, principal, was a technology director where I had the chance to launch a one-to-one learning initiative in a big school district, and went on to be superintendent before I joined my partner Leilani Coffin to form the Learning Council to work with school districts all around the United States, talking with them about this need to plan for and prepare for and actively work towards transitioning the digital curriculum and content that they are facing down, that we saw that there was a real gap in the marketplace and no one was really speaking to them about this in a way that they could understand. So that's what brought us to form the Learning Council, and we've been doing this for about 4.5 years now, touring and traveling in about 30 cities a year in the United States, working with superintendents, assistant superintendents, principals, and some teachers, just helping them understand what's going on in the marketplace with education technology and strategies and tactics for making the switch from older types of curriculum objects to the new digital ones that are being published these days by more than 7,000 publishers as we last counted in the marketplace now. So we're excited about our work and really love what we do and love helping folks.
That's absolutely amazing. It sounds really like you are absolutely positive about using technology in education.
Just a little bit. I was blessed that my father worked as a computer programmer and systems analyst from back in the 60s going forward, and so I've always kind of grown up around it. Actually went to business school, not thinking I would ever go into education, but went into education a couple years after being out, and saw how, at the time technology was evolving, the internet was in its early stages, and saw some of the possibilities of it, and just kind of embraced it as a teacher, as a way to get students motivated and collaborating and communicating and working together, and so it's always been part of my teaching repertoire. And as I've moved into school administration, tried to model the use of information technology from an institution perspective to whoever I was leading or working with, so that their work could hopefully be done a little easier, because I think education's been the last institution to really embrace information technology, not because of its lack of potential, but I think just a lack of real understanding of what it could do, how it could be beneficial, both on the back end of administrating the school district, but as well as on the front end of the day-to-day, in the classroom. And a lot of that probably had to do with just really early software not living up to the expectations. But these days, with how far we've come with the advancement of of hardware that allows just this amazing software to work. I think we're sitting at a good spot to where we'll see, more and more transition to digital curriculum and content, because teachers will finally have tools that work and work well and work easily, that have good user interface and good user design, good user experience that will let the students get in and experience and learn how they're really used to, when they go home. So yes, it's a very positive time. I think we've got, really, really bright future with this. Still a lot of work to do with convincing folks of that, and still a lot of work to do in terms of refining what good software is and what good software can do, and then helping educators understand that and helping the publishers understand that. So, but still, lots of potential out there.
Oh yeah, totally agree with you. There is a lot of potential for using technology in education. And yes, one of them could be definitely the digitalizing of educational content. And can you please elaborate a little bit more on that? Like you're talking how to kind of digitalize the content and you're talking about that to schools and so on. What the tools or what kind of software you're exactly using, if you can share, or what kind of advice?
So the type of advice that we're trying to help school districts through is really having a good understanding of the difference between digital and digitized content. And I'm sure in your position you've seen where early attempts at schools providing digital curriculum, they put a learning management system in place, and they made it available to the teachers, and teachers thought that, well, we're gonna have a digital curriculum now, and started transitioning their documents just to PDF documents. Well, that's a very low order of magnitude digital document, and so and really doesn't change anything. And so what we're trying to help folks understand is the complexity of digital objects from the very basic form is like a static PDF document, all the way up to these environments where you have curriculum systems or curriculum lessons and sequences to work through, where there might be an engine and that has these algorithms that's being watched by machine learning intelligence and is directing or redirecting the student through these systems as they show mastery or not mastery, and turning around and providing good actionable data to teachers so that teachers, when the students are not in front of the screen, they need to be in small groups or they need some one-to-one instruction with teachers, that the teachers have good data in front of them, and know what to do. But it's even more complex than that, and just helping, not just the classroom but the systems folks understand that, you need a holistic approach to how you're managing all of this information you're gathering about the students, which systems are interoperable, so that there's an easy exchange of data, so that there's an easy process of onboarding students into these systems, so that the teacher doesn't get bogged down into it, and the students don't get bogged down into it. It's just easy, it's seamless, and you don't lose class time or instructional time or the motivation or enthusiasm of those folks that are using these systems on the front end.
That's interesting. And out of curiosity, how many schools have you seen adopting this?
We see a lot of school districts, kind of stepping back and taking a look at their systems, and working with or adopting the standards of an organization like IMS Global with some of their interoperability standards for software. Over the last 4.5 or so years, I believe the Learning Council, we've worked with over 500 to 600 school districts around the country. Plus, we have a reader base of about 220,000 readers of our weekly and monthly newsletters, depending on who you are. And you know, we really are starting to see folks look holistically at this as not just, well, we need one piece here or one piece there, but step back and say, okay, you know, the landscape is, you know, we've got to have a back end that works really well together. So how do we do that? What are the, you know, interoperability standards we need to adopt? What are the data security policies that we need to adopt? And so, you know, as they are becoming aware of these more and more, and not just from the Learning Council, but a lot of the other organizations in our field are paying attention to some of these same things. They're, you know, they're getting the message, and they're slowly moving down this road. I would say we see it probably more in the larger school districts, more so than the smaller school districts, just because the larger ones have more staff at their beck and call to address these issues in a more timely manner. The smaller districts seem to lag a little bit, not because they want to, but just because they've got smaller numbers of folks wearing more hats in their districts, and it just takes more time for them to get to them.
Okay.
And address these issues.
Got you on that point. Brilliant. And now I want to hear your personal point of view, like which technologies, and especially I would like to find out which emerging technologies you think could be beneficial for the education. Maybe 3D printing, maybe something like virtual reality.
So neither of the, well, those in combination with a couple of things. I think what's exciting me right now is this combination of using machine learning with curriculum-based software that has really good user interface, user experience combined with it. And maybe it's built for a tablet, maybe it's built for a phone, but this thought that students can, you know, at the teacher's direction, come into a classroom and spend, you know, no more than maybe a third of their class time involved in these systems, that they're getting highly personalized instruction that's watching how well they are mastering the topic and moving forward, or need some more support. And that could be based, you know, in virtual reality or that type of thing. And then you start supplementing that with other technologies that you mentioned, like the 3D printing that come when, you know, the kids come out of these software systems and sit down and work with a teacher or mentor, you know, and on small group instruction, on project-based instruction, where they've got, they have the need to apply what they've learned to, you know, something that the teacher has given them to grapple with, some problem that they need to solve. And maybe it's something they need to engineer, maybe it's something they need to create, maybe it's something they need to, you know, do more research on. So, you know, I think it's kind of a combination of things that we're seeing that excites us about what's happening, because in reality, what technology should be doing from our perspective is freeing the teacher up to be the human in the classroom, so that they don't necessarily need to be the sage on the stage. Rather, they need to be the mentor, the guide, the facilitator, the social person, you know, the one looking after the humanness of the students, and letting the software and the technology do the heavy lifting for them. And, you know, a lot of teachers, I think, are fearful of such a switch in their role, because they think that, you know, the expectation is going to be that they're going to be hit with more students. But as we watch some of these pilot programs around the United States, be they private schools or charter schools that have kind of adopted this model of using more digital curriculum and a lot of screen time learning in the classroom and working in highly personalized education environments for their students, where they've kind of knock the walls down around grades and ages, that the student-to-teacher ratio actually needs to be much lower than it is in a lot of situations today. You know, really down to 10 to 1, to 12 to 1, depending on the age of the student. So, you know, if I were a teacher and looking at it from that perspective, I think, you know, we hope and we keep trying to send the message that, you know, this is good for teachers because it's going to require more of them. If we really want to get to these personalized and individualized learning environments that seem to be trendy in terms of being talked about, but in reality, when you put them in the place, you know, you're going to need more humans around to facilitate this because students are going to go down more individualized pathways. Does that answer your question?
Absolutely. Absolutely does. I actually wanted to add that personalized learning is the key because all of us are so different and so are the kids, and we need to develop those based on the personalized learning, exactly the traits that are really good for them for their future. And I think this could be done through machine learning and analyze and artificial intelligence and also the personalization of the whole approach to the education. So I totally
absolutely. I mean, we have profile tests like the Myers-Briggs to, you know, to learn what the different personalities of each individuals are, and that tells you, you know, a lot about who they are and what their socialness is and what their capacity for collaboration or interaction is, and little things like that, nuances like that, can help you guide a student into things where, you know, if they're not highly social, then, you know, putting them up in front of somebody as a communications person probably isn't the best choice. But maybe they're, you know, technical enough and have the, you know, the abilities in that area where steering them down to a path of engineering, you know, to let them explore that is highly probable. And, you know, we know that students need to be up and moving and more active than they are in a lot of classrooms today, not because teachers don't want to let them, it's just we haven't really looked at the school environments and redesigned them yet to facilitate what we know are the needs of the students, to be standing more, to be moving around more, and, you know, the benefits of this that come back into place in terms of learning, time on task, better behavior. You know, we're still getting data in on that, but all of it's very positive. And so, you know, as we head down this road of transitioning to the environments, you know, that are more digital, I think, you know, schools are catching on that they also need to redesign the space, that they need to redefine the role of the teacher. And so it's not just a one-shot piece like introducing technology into it. It's a whole revision of how personalized education needs to be facilitated.
Yeah, totally agree with that. And as you have mentioned, like, one more question I have to you. You have mentioned before, like, sometimes you meet teachers who are a little bit with the fear or confidence in using technology in general. How would you approach them, and what would you say to them for them to kind of go outside their comfort zone and help them to kind of feel more comfortable in using technology?
Sure. You know, it's up to the school districts and the schools that are pushing new initiatives with new types of digital curriculum. To really provide the professional development, the professional learning, the personalized learning, the same thing we talk about for students needs to happen for teachers. Because one of the biggest shifts that education is confronting is that the new norm is a constant change. You know, there's change, you know, technology is going to change, the software is going to change. You're not adopting a book for 5 or 10 years of use anymore. If you go digital, it's going, you know, things are going to be tinkered with or updated or improved constantly, and to survive in that, you know, as education institutions, we've got to realize that we've got to support our teachers and we've got to train them and allow them to be grown professionally, so that they stay comfortable and they stay aware of what state of the art is and how they can leverage that, you know, to their potential, not only as a teacher, so that, you know, they're working to their most efficient method so that they can go home and have a life at the end of the day and not spend the rest of their evening doing schoolwork when they should be allowed to have a little bit of a life and attend to their family or their personal needs.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. They can free up their own time. Absolutely, absolutely brilliant point. David, last question to you. Would you recommend any specific resources or maybe some blogs or something interesting for people to read, to watch, to listen in regards to educating themselves in the field of technology and education?
I'm going to shamelessly plug our work at the Learning Council. We continuously publish a newsletter electronically, at least monthly. Our website is updated twice a week with new articles on new stuff and the education arena in terms of educational software or educational hardware. You know, we've written about 7 or 8 special reports now on various topics as we're helping schools move from, you know, developing strategies first all to this end goal of where we see schools as expositional centers of learning. So, you know, I would say come join the Learning Council and sign up for our newsletter and, you know, it's full of great resources and links there. We do try and shy away from plugging individual products just because, you know, trying to be a media company, we like to stay neutral as much as we can. But you will find articles that mention stuff, you know, at our website there. So if that's okay, I'll just do that. How about that?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's absolutely brilliant. We're going to share the link to your website and the blog so people can get signed up if they want to. And also, I think that what you do is absolutely, absolutely brilliant and review of different educational technologies. Because what our research that we've conducted recently also shown that educators are looking for this information. And I think this is brilliant that you're doing this job. And thank you very much, David.
Well, thank you.
Thank you a lot.
Oh, thank you, Daria. Thank you for having me and best of luck.
Everything changes.